Their air tanks were still lying out on the surface, more than arm's reach away. Okay, keep your radio open. If we get completely cut off, you stay in the hole for 14 hours. Got that? 14 hours, check. Time count starts now. 14 hours from now, Amanda confirmed. Have a nice day. We'll see you in 14 hours, Yuke said. Right, said Dan, silently adding, dead or alive. To Pancho, he said, I'd better drag the air tanks in here. Before she could object, he pushed himself out of the hole and soared up above the dark, uneven ground. Dan glanced around but could not find the shelter that Amanda and Fuchs had dug for themselves. They did a good job, he thought, as he tapped his jet thruster controls to push himself back to the surface. The cylinders weighed next to nothing, but still he was careful with them as he slid them down into the pit. They still have mass and inertia, Dan knew. I could break open Poncho's helmet or spring her suit's joints if I let one of these things bang into her. By the time he wormed himself back into the pit beside her, Dan was bathed in cold sweat and puffing hard. You're not used to real work, are you, boss? Pancho teased. Dan shook his head inside his helmet. Soon as we get back to Cellini, I'm going in for rejuvenation therapy. Me too. You? At your age? Sooner is better than later, they claim. Dan humphed. Better than late than never. Radiation levels starting to climb, Pancho said, starting to paw at the sides of their pit again. We'd better get ourselves buried, or neither one of us will get any younger. Or older, Dan muttered. Buried alive. This is like something out of an Edgar Allan Poe story, Dan said to himself. He knew Pancho was mere centimeters from him. So were the air tanks. But he could see nothing. They were buried under nearly a full meter of loose rubble, curled fetally, nothing to see or hear or do except wait. Are you doing? He heard Amanda's voice, scratchy and weak through his helmet speaker. We're okay, Pancho said. I've been thinking we ought to organize a square dance. Dan suppressed a groan. That's just what we need, he thought. Redneck humor. Then surprisingly, he laughed. He hadn't heard the term redneck since he'd been in Texas long ages ago. There are no rednecks off Earth, Dan realized. You don't get sunburned out here. Cooked, maybe. Fried by radiation, but not tanned. Not unless you sit under the sun lamps in the gym at Cellini. He wiggled his right hand through the loose rubble encasing him and felt for the keyboard on his left forearm. By touch, he called up the ship's sensor display. They had programmed the suits to show the displays on the inner surfaces of their bubble helmets. Nothing but streaks of colored hash. Either the pile of dirt atop them or the radiation storm was interfering with their link to the ship. Probably a combination of both, he thought. What's the time? Dan asked. At least he could talk with Pancho. Even if the radio link broke down completely, they were close enough to scrunch through the dirt and touch helmets so that they could talk through sound conduction. More than 13 hours to go, boss. You mean we've been down here for less than an hour? 49 minutes, to be exact. Shit, Dan said with feeling. Take a nap. Best way to spend the time. Dan nodded inside his helmet. Nothing else to do. He heard Pancho giggle softly. What's funny? Mandy and Lars. I bet they're trying to figure out how to get the two of them into one suit. Dan laughed, too. Maybe you and I ought to try that. Boss, Pancho cried in mock shock. That's sexual harassment. Nothing else to do, he repeated. I can't even jerk off inside this double-damned suit. I can, Pancho teased. Now that's sexual harassment, Dan grumbled. Nope, just better design. Dan licked his lips. He felt thirsty, chilled, yet he was sweating. His stomach was queasy. How do you feel, Pancho? Bored. Tired. Too jumpy to sleep. How about you? The same, I guess. Every part of me aches. How's your blood pressure? How in the hell would I know? You hear your pulse in your ears? No? Then you're okay, I guess. Thank you, Dr. Poncho. Go to sleep, boss. That's what I'm going to try to do. I thought you said you were too jumpy. Yeah, but I'm going to give it a try. Close my eyes and think pleasant thoughts. Good luck. You try it, too. Sure. Dan closed his eyes, but his thoughts were far from pleasant. Opening them again, he fumbled with his wrist keyboard until he got the suit's radiation sensor displayed on his helmet. The graph was distorted by the curve of his helmet and blurry. He tried to focus his eyes on it. Looks okay, he said to himself. Curve's going up, but the slope is low and it's a far distance from the red zone. Try to sleep. He was certainly tired enough for it. Relax. Think about what you're going to do when you get back to Cellini. I'd like to personally punch out Humphreys' lights. Dan pictured Humphreys' surprise when he broke his nose with a good straight right. Somewhere in his mind, an old adage sounded, "Revenge is a dish best taken cold." Punching in Humphreys' face would be fun, but what would really hurt the bastard? He's tried to kill me. He may succeed, yet we're not out of this. If I die, he'll move in and take over Astro. How can I prevent him from doing that? How can I stop him, even from the grave? Dan chuckled bitterly to himself. I'm already in my grave, he realized. I'm already buried.
Nanotechnology Laboratory.
Charlie Engels looked worried, upset. He nervously brushed his sandy hair back away from his forehead as he said, Chris, I'm not supposed to let you in here. It was well past midnight. Cardenas was surprised that anyone was still working in the lab complex. Cellini's security people hadn't bothered to change the entry code on the main door. She had just tapped it out and the door had obligingly slid open. But Engels had been working in his cubicle, and as soon as he saw Cardenas striding determinedly past the empty workstations toward her own office, he popped out of his cubbyhole and stopped her. We got notified by security, he said, looking shamefaced. You're not allowed in here until further notice. I know, Charlie, he said. I just want to clear out my desk. Charles Engels was a young grad student from New York whose parents had sent him to Cellini after he'd been crippled in a car crash. Even knowing that he could never return to them once he'd taken nanotherapy, his parents wanted their son's legs repaired so he could walk again. The cameras, Engels pointed to the tiny, unwinking red lights in the corners of the ceiling. Security will send somebody here once they see you. It's all right, she said, trying to mask her inner tension. I'll only be here a few minutes. You can go back to your work. Instead, he walked with her as she headed for her office. What's this all about, Chris? Why do they want to lock you out of your own lab? It's a long story, and I'd rather not go into it right now, Charlie. Please, I just need a few minutes in my office. He looked unhappy, almost wounded. If there's anything I can do to help... Cardenas smiled and felt tears welling in her eyes. That's very kind of you, Charlie. Thanks. I mean, I wouldn't be able to walk if it weren't for you. She nodded and added silently, And now that you can walk, you'll never be allowed to return to Earth. Well, he shifted uneasily from one foot to the other. If there's anything you need, anything at all, just let me know. Thanks, Charlie. I'll do that. He stood there for another awkward moment while Cardenas wondered how long it would take security to send someone to apprehend her. Finally, he headed back to his own cubicle, reluctantly. She walked slowly toward her office. Once Charlie stepped into his cubicle, though, Cardenas swiftly turned down a side passageway toward the rear of the laboratory complex. She passed a sign that proclaimed in red letters, Authorized personnel only beyond this point. This was the area where newly developed nanomachines were tested. The passageway here was lined with sealed, airtight chambers, rather than the cubicles out front. The door to each chamber was locked. The passageway itself was lined with ultraviolet lamps along its ceiling. Each nanomachine